This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Take this woman as your lawful wedded wife.
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring.
With this ring.
I thee wed.
I thee wed.
Hello and welcome to With This Ring. I'm your co-host Ryan Everett.
I'm Cindy Everett.
And today, for the first time, we will be leaving the friendly confines of the WWF and heading down south to Atlanta. Although none of these matches we'll be looking at in particular
are
in
Atlanta. Baltimore is north of the Mason-Dixon line, right?
So. Yeah, well, Baltimore, well, they do Philly also, but Baltimore was pretty much the far north.
Oh, okay.
Especially when it was like the Jim Crockett Promotions territory.
Oh, you're jumping right in.
Oh, yeah. That was as far north. That was like the northernmost point, really.
Okay.
So, someone came up to you and said, WCW, Jim Crockett Promotions, NWA, what is all that?
That doesn't mean anything to me. It still barely means anything to me.
Well, I did watch the first hour of a documentary.
Which they also didn't really do a good job giving context on that either.
Yeah, I think they expect going into that to have some background knowledge.
Yeah, it was definitely not the like entry level course. It was like the intermediate course.
Well, it's basically so in 19.
Give me the Cliff Notes version.
So in 1948, there was all these different territories. Like every little couple states had their wrestling territory.
Right.
And back then there was barely even TV, but like radio or whatever, you would just. If you lived in Chicago, you would just get the AWA.
Okay.
And that was like it. It would come once a week. They'd show. And then on the, like later in the 50s and 60s, they'd have their once a week TV show that you'd watch. And it would. So in 1948, they made the National Wrestling Alliance, though, where all these territories bandied together. And there was always one world champion for all of them.
Okay.
So, like, to put it in modern terms, it would be like, okay, Steve Austin is the world champ.
Okay.
He's going to go to the Ohio territory on Monday, the St. Louis territory on Tuesday. He'd travel around. So he wasn't in any one group.
Okay.
He was just the champion who would travel to each group and fight their top guy.
Gotcha.
So going on.
And who decided who the top guy was?
They voted, actually.
Oh, okay.
So it was a vote. And like
meaning all the different
all territories? All the different promoters.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it would kind of be like, there'd be maybe three or four guys who, like, they'd be, and each one would want it to be someone from their home territory, because they'd get
more exposure.
Part of the money.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and more, yeah. But,
money. The Monday.
But, I mean, you'd also want someone who was legitimate, who could handle himself in a real fight if it came to that.
Gotcha.
At that time, you still needed that, because there could be double crosses and Montreal screw jobs and whatnot.
Oh, yes, yes. And I know what you're talking about.
Yes. So then one of the promotions then was Jim Crockett Promotions. And it was the Mid-Atlantic Territory is what it was called. So it was like the Carolinas, Virginia, in the little bit of Georgia.
Okay.
That sort of region of the country, though.
Okay.
Up to Baltimore. And then, so that was Jim Crockett Promotions.
And when was he popular? When was he managing?
He started like the dad started in like the 30s promoting,
oh, wow.
But then like in the 70s and 80s, it was becoming popular. They had Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair, mm-hmm. Roddy Piper, like bigger
names.
Ric Flair became champion, NWA champ.
Ah, okay.
So he was, and then cable television became a thing.
Right.
Whereas instead of just showing your
like
Mid-Atlantic
to
the Carolinas and Virginia, you're showing it to the whole country because you get on TBS,
gotcha.
Which is Ted Turner's station.
Okay, yep.
So the Crocketts their main flagship show was the Saturday Night Show, and it was called World Championship Wrestling.
Okay.
But it was still called Jim Crockett Promotions Presents.
Got it.
This. And then in the late 80s, the Crocketts made some bad business deals. That's a whole other...
Was that in the documentary? Because I didn't
they
quite
kind
follow.
Of glossed over oh, okay. it, because I think they were allowing the Crocketts to kind of not write the narrative,
oh,
but
dictate
kind
the
of,
narrative. Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
A little bit, so they didn't really focus on how bad. Well, they do say, though, they tried to overexpand too much. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Ric Flair says, if we stayed between Chicago and Baltimore and south of that, we would have been fine. Cause,
right.
But then they started doing, like, oh, this weekend we're going to Las Vegas or Los Angeles for this.
That's
week.
Right. They're burning through all
and
their money.
Yeah, they were burning through so much money that they had to sell to someone. And it being the biggest ratings getter on TBS, Ted Turner was like, I'll buy it.
Yep.
So he bought it and rechristened the whole thing just WCW.
Okay.
And then eventually the NWA was a promotion, was the overall promotion, but like all the ones that really mattered were under WCW.
Okay.
So then in like the 90s, they kind of dissolved the NWA. It's back now, but not like it used to be.
Gotcha.
So this, it's a long story short, WCW itself, the promotion, really only is from 89 to 2001.
Okay.
But Jim Crockett Promotions is from like 1938 or whatever to
long
1988.
History. Okay.
But the GWCW match project, which is what we'll be
gotcha.
Revealing for Place to Be Nation.
Okay.
Runs from January 1st, 1981 to March 26, 2001, which is when
okay.
they ended the final Nitro.
Okay. Who set the parameters around starting with 1981?
I think they just kind of thought it was the date where there's the most like reliable material and
gotcha.
Like on the network, they have Mid-Atlantic Championship wrestling shows starting in 1981, and it's kind of like that's just it. Like, oh, I went to a house show in Charlotte in 1974. Well, great, no one can see that footage,
good
so
for you. Yeah.
You could throw a vote there, but it's kind of like just
gotcha.
And I think that's why this one will be a lot not more interesting, but different from the WWE one because that went from 1963 up until 2000. Really, December 31st, 2019.
Gotcha.
Whereas this one has a start date
and an end date.
Okay, so for our first act here, we've decided since it's summer we're going to look at both the Great American Bash and Bash at the Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with Great American Bash. And the first Great American Bash, it actually started back in the early 80s.
Okay.
1985, it was just a big house show then. They didn't have pay-per-view.
Right.
And then 86 and 87, so it was just one show back in 85. And then 86 and 87, they had like a month-long tour of shows.
Oh. Well, this is back when it was like a loose like conglomerate, right?
Yeah, this was, I mean, it was Jim Crockett Promotions was like the main group, but then they had like Florida.
Right.
And like Kansas, they kind of like sent some guys there.
Gotcha.
And it was kind of like if they were in Florida, they'd send like Ric Flair and stuff there, but their main event would be like the Florida heavyweight title match.
Gotcha.
So they kind of crafted it around whatever the local crowd would be seeing each week.
Okay.
And then in 86 it was just the house shows. In 87 it was just house shows again, but they made a compilation tape of like eight of the biggest matches there. And then 88, they finally...
Wait, those compilation tapes. Do you have a copy?
I've seen it. It was actually It was, like, commercially released. Like,
oh, okay.
It wasn't
so you don't own it?
Well, I have a digital file.
Oh, I know. That's not the same, though, as owning a VHS.
Well, I watched the VHS from Blockbuster years ago, but... And then 1988 was the first time they actually did a Great American Bash pay-per-view.
Gotcha.
And then they did it.
And is that like the, sorry to keep interrupting, is that like the answer to SummerSlam? Or was that even a thing yet?
Well, SummerSlam came out 2 months later, actually.
Oh.
And SummerSlam originally...
So SummerSlam's a ripoff of Great American Bash.
Kind of.
Ah.
Yes.
Did not know that.
So then
So they did the Great American Bash from 88 to 92, and then there isn't one in 93 and 94, and then it came back in 95 through 2000. And originally, it was like the 4th of July pay-per-view in July. Then when it came back in 95, it was like the Father's Day June pay-per-view.
Gotcha.
So actually...
Never really directly competed with SummerSlam then.
It was just each of their summer pay-per-views. Because originally, Vince McMahon wanted to do SummerSlam to block the Great American Bash by saying that, there couldn't be a wrestling pay-per-view 60 days before SummerSlam and 60 days after SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, was obviously not met. So the first match we saw was from 1992.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually a little out of order between the 92 Great American Bash and Beach Blast. Because those actually, the Beach Blast match actually came first.
Oh,
so we'll get to that later though. But to do all the Great American Bash matches first. The first match we saw was Sting versus Vader for the WCW World Heavyweight title from the Albany Civic Center in Albany, Georgia.
Yeah.
And what did you think?
Well, I really had never really seen a lot of Vader or Sting. I mean, Sting was vaguely in my consciousness because one of the WWE matches we watched, he came out and everyone like lost their minds.
Right.
Did Vader ever show up in WWE?
Yeah, Vader was in WWF.
WWF.
Yes, and 96 through like 98, but it was a very watered down, not like the dominant monster that he was in WCW.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, in this match...
I think it was kind of like he was past his prime and stuff, so it was kind of a mixture of the two things.
This one was okay. I don't really like that test of strength, they just grab each other's hands.
Yeah.
It's not visually compelling. I don't really find it that particularly interesting. I thought the crowd was really quiet on this one, too.
Yeah. The crowd is kind of weird here.
Do you know why they're so quiet?
Well, the pay-per-view overall is weird. It's nothing but... It's a tag team title tournament. So that's all they get the whole card except for this match.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it wasn't a well-put-together card.
Doesn't sound like it. But yeah, Vader definitely had the size advantage. Although Sting did a couple... I mean, Sting picked his ass up and suplexed him a couple times.
And slammed him, yeah.
Yeah, very impressive. But Vader did win in the end.
Yes, and it's a very clean, decisive
win
for a heel, which...
Vader was a heel?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you would, never see that in WWF at the time. Like, if a heel was going to be Hulk Hogan or the Ultimate Warrior, there was going to be something going on. So it was really... And this was... If you remember when we watched the documentary, this was Bill Watts, the old... Crusty cowboy who, they talk about wasn't politically correct and...
Oh, like, really? A strip club in South Carolina, that guy?
No.
Oh, am I thinking another documentary that I watched?
I think you might be. I don't remember Bill Watts having a strip club in South Carolina. But he was the guy who...
Oh, I remember that Nick Millions one that we watched.
Yeah, that might have been it. Yeah, it was not Bill Watts in that. I don't think so. But he was the guy who came in and, said his main duty was... told to cut as much budget as you can just to try and make it profit. So he was a very old school kind of guy. So that's why the tournament was the tag team title tournament was the whole pay-per-view and then this title match. And it's a good idea to get what he was thinking was make a heel champion. So then everyone will want to see him lose eventually, which is a good philosophy and it does work sometimes. And I think Vader was the right guy for it, but it's just, yeah, I agree. The crowd was not very into it. And it's, I think, because Vader hadn't really been around that long.
Right.
So it was kind of surprising that he just comes and beats Sting, especially so cleanly. Even then, they were probably expecting something to happen. But
it was Sting, the most popular one.
Yeah, he was the man in WCW.
He was the man in WCW bar for a lot of the time. I think him and Ric Flair, the bleach blonde guys.
Yes.
That's why it was so disorienting to watch that Sting match where he had, long brown hair.
Yes. Well, that was, that's in the we'll later stages of Sting.
Yeah.
So then,
What did you think of that match?
I really like it just because...
Really?
Just because of how it's different than most main event, title matches. It's not the face comes out and starts strong and then the heel does something to cheat and take over. It's Vader just beats him the whole match. And Sting gets his poke spots, but it's never it's never really like even close.
That's true. All right. Fair enough.
And then I do, and then the end, Sting goes for the Stinger splash, his big splash in the corner. And he just like overshoots it and hits the ring post.
Oh, that's right.
And it's kind of like Sting was trying everything he can and tried to take a risk and it didn't pay off.
Right.
And then Vader just pounces on it. So then, like I said, WCW put Great American Bash to the side for 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Came back at 1995. And, well, here it says Trotwood, Ohio. I guess that's like a suburb of Dayton.
Yeah, Trotwood.
Trotwood? Yeah. Yeah, it's in the, it is part of the Dayton metro area.
Which, no offense to Dayton, Dayton's not a very big city to begin with, and then they have a metro area. Oh, yeah.
So it has, well, 24,000 people.
Okay.
So I wonder how many people were at the arena.
Yeah. What size arena was that?
A
town of 24,000 people.
Doesn't say. Yeah. Well, the arena is no longer there. But I think, well, it's probably like 4,000 or 5,000. I mean, just because the city itself isn't that big, it's next to, like,
relatively large.
Like, what was Richfield?
Good point, touche.
And that was like
Richfield is nothing.
Pontiac, Michigan, I don't think had that many people, and that's where the Silver Dome was.
Right. So, yeah, I guess that was the time when they were putting all those arenas in the suburbs.
Yeah. So.
Coliseum's great.
sure it is. So we watched the main event from this show also. Ric Flair defeated Randy Savage with Angelo Poffo.
Yes.
Randy
Savage's dad. This is main event versus main event. This one, I like this one a lot better.
Okay, yeah, that's good. So, yeah, I really like this. I mean, Ric Flair and Randy Savage are, yeah, they're only in WCW for the same time for like 3 years, but there's going to be like 4 or 5 matches on my poll. I just, and they were, had a top 20 match in the WWF poll for me. They're, those two, when they get together, they're just able to do
good stuff. Right.
I mean, it's not really surprising. It's,
exactly.
Two of the top, at the very least, 10 wrestlers of all
time.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess they have good chemistry, too. I guess
there could be that. Yeah, which is kind of surprising.
Like, George and Susan didn't have good chemistry on Seinfeld.
Of course.
They're both good actors.
Yes. Which is, and the fact that they have good chemistry, we'll touch on that in two minutes.
A little later. Yeah.
But, so back and forth match. And they really keep putting over how crazy Randy Savage is.
Yep.
Bobby Heenan, especially in commentary. Just keeps talking about how dangerous he is.
Bobby Heenan's not known for his subtlety.
No, especially involving Ric Flair.
Right. Oh, yeah, seriously.
So, the match goes on, and I gotta say, though, Angelo Poffo kind of gets himself involved. He gets
towards
the ring, so...
Well, of course, you know he's gonna get involved, so why else would he be out there?
Exactly. So
I've watched enough wrestling with you to know that it's like Chekhov's dad.
Well, he had beaten up... Ric Flair had beaten him up at the previous pay-per-view, so...
Right.
He was looking for revenge, and at the very end, his cane gets thrown in the ring, so Ric Flair just swings it like a baseball bat.
Yeah, he really smacks
Savage with it.
Yeah.
For the win.
Yeah. Yeah, Randy Savage, my first note is that he really upped his ring gear for WCW.
Yes, he got a lot more tassels.
A lot of fringe.
Yeah.
I know I asked, we talked about this, I think, before, but what happened to all of his outfits?
I don't know. I think on one DVD they showed the guy who made them, and he had like a closet full of them still. So I don't know. I've seen some of them have shown up like on eBay and stuff with like certificates of authenticity.
Well, how much are those?
Oh, it's usually like $15,000 or so.
Okay, we have to win the lottery first.
Yeah. I'm not going to put, you know, WrestleMania 6 ring-worn Randy Savage on the Christmas list anytime soon.
Yeah, well.
Maybe a knockoff. Yeah. Oh, well, I've had my knockoffs. Yeah, my women's lacrosse pants were very close, I think.
They were.
Early 90s Savage.
I agree. That was a good get.
All right. So anything else for this one?
Good moves. Oh, it was a Hooters Girls, the valet.
Yes. That was an odd occurrence.
Yeah, I mean, WCW in general just seems like a hot mess.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
You know, like they're trying. You can kind of tell they didn't really have consistent leadership. The way that WWE
No,
did
that's
that
for sure.
Really shows. So,
although by this point, from 95 till we're not going to watch many 99 matches. So 95, and it's Eric Bischoff is starting to right the ship a little bit.
I get some more.
Yeah.
Consistent tone.
So the next, we'll go to the Great American Bash 96, and I had three matches from here.
Yep.
That I thought we should watch.
Well, the one is just hilarious.
Yes. So the first one, though, is Dean Malenko defending the Cruiserweight title against Rey Mysterio. And what did you think of this? This is also important to note, Rey Mysterio's WCW debut.
Oh, yeah. He was like a baby.
Yes. No tattoos.
Yeah, no tattoos. He was like 21, I think they said.
I think so. And he's like a seven-year veteran at that point.
That's crazy. I thought it was good. I mean, obviously, actually, of all the people we've watched, I probably was most familiar with Rey Mysterio, yeah. Other than like Ric Flair and Randy Savage.
Right.
So it wasn't anything like I hadn't seen before out of him.
Right.
You know? So a lot of the flippy, twisty.
Yeah.
Like, it's still impressive.
Yeah.
Still very impressed, but he kind of reminds me of Rob Van Dam, where it's more like gymnastics than wrestling.
Yeah, there's some of that in him, but I think it's a little more forceful, or like at least that's just how they do it in Mexico. So
that's true. Yeah. Definitely different. What did you think?
I liked it. I think it's the thing I've heard when people do criticize it but still call it a great match, is that it's too much of a Dean Malenko match and not enough, like Rey Mysterio's not allowed to shine enough.
Huh.
Like, he gets his little spots, but it's really, there is a lot of Dean Malenko, like working him over.
I liked the finisher.
Yeah.
That Dean Malenko put on him.
Yeah.
Was Dean Malenko, like, more, was like, he was better known, or
He was a little bit better. I think they were just trying to, because in his debut, if Rey Mysterio comes in and wins the title, it's kind of like, what else?
That's true. You
kind like, of it shows, oh, he's it. Better than everyone else already.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it was an actually the right move to have.
Well, nowhere to go but up.
Right.
If you win your first match, the title match, that's like Paige.
Yes, yes.
Beating AJ. See, look, I made a wrestling
reference. Very good.
We also watched that movie.
Yes, yeah.
And there is a sleeping baby on my chest. Just going to.
You're right.
Might be some noises coming.
So then next we went to Chris Benoit against Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster, in a Falls Count Anywhere match. And it is maybe, you know, the 1992 Royal Rumble match is
iconic
for everything in it, including the commentary. Right. This, though, I think might be the greatest 10 minutes of commentary in wrestling. Dusty Rhodes is just having the time of his life, especially when they get to the bathroom.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah,
he's screaming, there's a lady! There's a lady in the woman's bathroom, in the man's bathroom! Oh, she stopped off to get some relief! And then the head in the commode, they keep yelling about.
Yeah. Why? Like, how do they decide that? Obviously, that was planned.
Yes, I think.
But, like, what? Why?
I don't know. And, And there are some spots where it happens in Chris Benoit matches where hits to the head are kind of cringeworthy, knowing what would happen.
That's a good
point. Him getting a bathroom stall door slammed on his head, full bore, where there's not a lot of give in that.
Exactly.
It's kind of like, ugh. But, you know, I think I'm more comfortable with Chris Benoit WCW matches than WWF, just because it's, like, further removed.
Because it's earlier?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, not that that really helps, but it's the way I personally justify it, I guess. So, quick match, though. Only 10 minutes.
And I mean, it's even really like, it's just like I wrote chaos as usual.
Yes, it is. But, I mean, they do get back toward the ring eventually. And they do hit a huge superplex off the table in the corner. Yeah,
that was nuts. And then Arn Anderson shows up.
I
don't really know why.
Yeah, that was kind of like a thing that, like, in the weeks leading up to it, so Chris Benoit was a four horseman. Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, so maybe give me I've heard that mentioned a couple times, but.
So Four Horsemen was like the biggest group in WCW, like from the mid-80s on.
Oh, that long ago?
Yeah, well, it was on and off.
Gotcha.
It was always Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, and then
two
other guys. Usually Tully Blanchard and then someone else.
Who?
Tully Blanchard. We'll see later.
Okay.
But.
The who?
So it was always those two guys and then someone else. So at this point, it was Ric Flair, Chris Benoit, and Arn Anderson. And then in the weeks leading up to this, Kevin Sullivan, Arn Anderson was kind of siding with Kevin Sullivan because he didn't like how Chris Benoit was acting.
Oh,
so then he comes out at the end here and acts like he's going to attack Chris Benoit, but then just starts beating the shit out of Kevin Sullivan. And both of them just start pounding away at him. And the crowd goes crazy.
Yeah, they do.
And it's kind of funny because, well, in this match, both of them are kind of heels.
Okay.
But Kevin Sullivan's like, Chris Benoit is just like a heel because he's like no nonsense and usually fights faces. Kevin Sullivan's like the devil, basically.
Really?
That was kind of like his gimmick.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, like, it was kind of the reason that, like, two bad guys, but Chris Benoit's not evil. Well,
yeah.
When
right.
At this point, wasn't evil.
Okay.
So, yeah, so the crowd just loves the Four Horsemen here. And that carries over to our next match.
I still understand. I have so many questions from these matches.
All right. So we have Ric Flair and Arn Anderson with Woman, Miss Elizabeth, and Bobby Heenan against Kevin Green and Steve McMichael, two football players.
Yeah. Why? What?
I don't know. Randy Savage as a manager.
Yep.
And with Deborah McMichael and Tara Green, the two wives of the football
players.
Right.
Okay. Let's unpack this one.
Okay. So Steve McMichael was a retired player. He had been on the Bears in like the mid. He was on the Super Bowl Bears, and it was a very good football player. So then in '95, when Nitro starts, the announced team is him, Bobby Heenan, and Eric Bischoff. Steve McMichael had really no.
How did he end up in there?
He just kind of winds up in there.
Okay.
It's just so kind of like whatever.
You already have him on the payroll and just like.
No, they like signed him for this.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah.
So then, over time, there's a Nitro where Deborah's in the front row and Ric Flair makes a pass at her.
Okay,
so that pisses off Steve McMichael.
Okay.
And somehow Steve McMichael is friends with Kevin Green because they both play football.
Obviously. All football players are friends.
Of course.
Yes.
Especially guys who are never on the same team together.
Right. Where was Kevin Green from?
He was on the Steelers for a while. This time he was on the Panthers, I think. So it eventually evolves into this thing where it'll be Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, because they're always together.
They're like the top two horsemen?
Yes. Against Kevin Green and Steve McMichael. And Bobby Heenan, this is the only match Bobby Heenan ever was a manager of in WCW.
Oh, okay.
He was always just an announcer. This one match he comes out, though, because it's Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. He wants to at least once manage the Four Horsemen.
Okay.
And then Randy Savage had been suspended from WCW because he was crazy.
Wait, like legitimately suspended?
No, like
storyline. Okay.
Because actually, it should be noted, like 3 months prior to this, there was a match between Ric Flair and Randy Savage again. And Elizabeth was in Randy Savage's corner. But she gives her shoe to Ric Flair to help Ric Flair win. So she turns on Macho Man.
Oh.
And that was why Savage was like going nuts, because Ric Flair and Elizabeth would always have like this huge catered meal at Nitro. And Ric Flair would say that they were just spending all of Randy Savage's alimony money. Because they really were divorced.
Oh, okay.
So they were kind of blurring the lines.
A little bit, yeah.
Which is kind of touchy to do with a real crazy person like Randy Savage. But
I think
Randy Savage has always said his favorite color was green. So he knew that it would make a successful angle. So he was willing to go for it.
Yeah.
And then, so this match, again, it's two football players. And it is better than it has any right to be, I think.
Oh, yeah. I guess the expectations are crazy low.
Right.
So, yeah. So, again, in my notes, I said the football players are doing okay. I mean, no moves off the ropes.
Right.
I guess if you're athletic and you know, somewhat coordinated.
Yeah. And I think this was, like, they'd been training for, like, 2 or 3 weeks prior to this, probably just going over the match and making sure everything worked out. So, yeah, and I mean, it helps that you're in there with Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, too, like the best.
Exactly, they can make you look good.
Yeah, they'll make you look good. If it was just random team, it wouldn't look horrible, probably.
Yeah.
And then at the end.
Oh, I wrote all, the football players get in the figure four, the ladies leave, then, like, the ladies come back.
Yeah, so all the ladies fight to the back, or run to the back.
Right.
And then Deborah Steve McMichael's wife comes back out with Elizabeth and woman, and she's in a nightgown, like an evening gown now, when she was just wearing.
Oh, she changed clothes?
Yeah, she was wearing like a bear's jacket.
That's right. Man, so, I'm still a little sleep deprived when I watch these.
So she shows Steve, her husband, the briefcase full of money and the Four Horsemen t-shirt. So he takes the briefcase and hits Kevin Green with it. And then,
because it's like basically saying like you're going to be a Four Horseman.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you accept the shirt, you get all this money.
Oh.
Like this kind of
the implication. Yeah. Well, I didn't really get that.
So he hits Kevin Green, turns on his partner, and actually they had made a rare subtlety from WCW earlier in the match. They talked about how late in his career, Steve McMichael went to the Packers.
Yeah.
And Tony Schiavone even points out like, you know, the rival of the Chicago Bears. And I asked him about it, and he said he did it for the money.
Oh, a little foreshadowing. Yeah,
so then later on when he does it, it's meant to make sense. Money. For the money, yes.
Well, I think people kind of get that, even there's no context. Like,
right, yeah, but I think just to kind of hammer it in there.
Yep.
So then Steve McMichael comes in, and they start beating him down after the match, and Randy Savage, of course, gets beat down. And Randy Savage is very involved in the match also.
Yeah, he's
all running around. He gets in the ring many times.
Yeah.
And the ref just kind of lets it go.
Well, he's going to do what he's going to do.
Right. So anything else to add about the 1996 Great American Bash?
No, it sounds like it was quite the show.
Yeah.
So at what point in the show did the whole bathroom thing happen? I guess so, the three matches we watched, is that the chronological order in the show?
Yeah, so
these
first three didn't, so one, two. So Dean Malenko, Mysterio, was fourth.
It's a lot of matches.
Chris Benoit, Sullivan was fifth. And then Ric Flair, the tag match was second to last.
What was the last?
The Giant versus Lex Luger. And it is not that good of a match. But the title match.
Gotcha.
And then also real quick in here, we also watched an interview segment where Eric Bischoff interviews Kevin Nash and Scott Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And that plant the seeds for what we'll watch at Bash at the Beach 96 eventually. But yeah, where Scott or Kevin Nash powerbombs Eric Bischoff off the stage.
That's right.
Through a table. So
the one that was False Count Anywhere at the Beach, the next one we watched.
Yeah, that was like, yeah, that's False Count Anywhere on the Gulf Coast.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
So then next we went to the Great American Bash 97. Yes, in the Mark of the Quad Cities, Moline. A 12,000 seat arena.
That's decent.
Yeah. I don't know if it was a sellout, but
Randy Savage versus DDP.
Yep.
Oh, this one was a hot mess too.
Yes. Well, this is a Falls Count Anywhere match. Like most of the matches that we saw actually.
Yeah. I think the WCW is just like whatever.
Yeah.
You're only going for like traditional, quote unquote. So this one was, I mean, it was a hot mess, but it was a fun hot mess.
Right, yeah, it's a fun brawl where they go all over the arena. There's a little picnic area for some reason set up.
I don't understand that still.
I don't know.
Macho gets hit with a crutch.
Yep.
He throws, like, sugar in his face or sand.
I think it was
chalk?
Sandbag, maybe?
I don't know. I wrote sugar.
Or no, it was powder. Yeah, the powder.
Well, whatever.
Well, powder is, like, something you throw in people's eyes in wrestling.
Like when?
Like in matches.
Which matches?
Like other ones.
This is the one that we've watched. Power.
It was kind of like an early, like late 70s, early
80s. Little throwback.
Yeah. So this is kind of what I was talking. So Randy Savage and Diamond Dallas Page are known for both of them being very particular about laying out their matches beforehand.
Yep. Well, I didn't know that about DDP.
Right.
About Macho Man.
So I think that's why this is the second match in a series that they had where the first one DDP wins, and that was like DDP's breakout moment. He was like a mid-carder at best at that point, and then he beats Randy Savage at Spring Stampede in April of this year. So then they have the rematch here, and Randy Savage gets the win back.
Okay. I was looking at my notes. Yeah, there's a bunch of refs that get knocked out.
Randy Savage pile drives a ref because he doesn't count the right way.
That's right. He knocks out two refs. Then I said he goes after Kimberly.
Yes.
Who's Kimberly?
DDP's wife.
That's right.
And known for her turn in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Who's she in 40-Year-Old Virgin?
The girl from Minnesota whose boot pops out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, we've talked about that before. Don't remember. Well, I did not put two and two together. I just watched that, but obviously.
Yeah, I mean,
you
that's
told me that before.
8 years
later
after this movie, yeah. Or after the show, so she looks a little different.
What else have we done at the picnic area? He knocks out a third ref, a photographer. Oh, and then Scott Hall from New World.
Yes.
Comes out,
Scott Hall comes
AKA
out.
AKA Razor Ramon.
Yes. And hits the outsider's edge / the razor's edge and DDP. Then Savage hits the big elbow and gets the win.
Mm-hmm. I wrote too chaotic. I guess it depends what you're in the mood for. I can see if you just really wanted to kind of half watch or just like for purely like entertainment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's not a great technical
it's
match
like the
by
CBS kind of sitcom of matches.
I'd put it a little higher than that.
Okay. Slightly higher than that. Not too much higher.
All right.
It's kind of for cheap laughs.
So real quick, let's just do the Great American Batch matches we saw. So what would you put as the top one?
Of this, so all six?
Yeah.
Probably, the Ric Flair, Randy Savage.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought you were going to go. And then, what next?
I'm going to mark these off. Well, I just spent it. Let me, do we really count the one they go in the bathroom?
I did, yeah.
I kind of count that as, the throwaway one.
The sixth?
For me, I'll kind of work back into it.
All right.
Okay, I'll do that as six, yeah, just because it's not.
Because you don't respect it?
I don't respect it. I mean, I love it, but I don't respect it, you know?
Gotcha.
The criteria of this list, I feel like, is not really going to make it. Same with the DDP Ready Savage one.
Oh, okay.
Second to last. It's just, I don't know. Not my style. A little too brawler. Oh, you already have yours ranked? That's like
yes.
Years.
Yeah.
I guess even though I didn't really say I didn't really like it that much, I think the football player one would be second. So the top one.
Second
is,
favorite?
No.
Okay.
I changed my mind. The Rey Mysterio one's my second favorite.
Okay. So then you have between Vader and Sting and Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. Yeah.
The Vader and Sting one was better. That would be my third. Well,
all right. And then.
That was really.
Four for
about.
The. No, so.
But I got it.
So you got.
This
from the bottom top, you have Kevin Sullivan versus Chris Benoit, DDP versus Randy Savage, Kevin Green and Steve McMichael versus Ric Flair and Arn Anderson,
yep.
Vader versus Sting,
yep.
Dean Malenko versus Rey Mysterio, and then Ric Flair versus Randy Savage.
That sounds good.
All right.
Yeah, I think obviously I had a clear number one and a clear number six.
Right. Just kind of work. Yeah, that's then. Kind of for me. I would say my favorite was Ric Flair, Randy yeah. Savage. And I'd have Kevin Green, Steve McMichael as sixth, I guess, just because
Okay.
I think everything else is just a little better. I think Kevin Green, Steve McMichael, it was really good just as a match itself. It's not the same
right.
level.
Yeah. I mean, for what it was. It
right.
Was a
good I think
job,
for what it was, yeah.
Different standards.
Now move on to Beach Blast /
Beach Blast. That's kind of a good tongue twister.
/ Bash at the Beach.
Okay. Let's do
but
it.
Before we do that, we want to tell everyone about all the great things going on the Place to Be Nation
Woo-hoo.
Wrestling Network. Actually, before we even start telling everyone about everything that's on there, we want to thank everyone very much, all the loyal listeners, because it's you that has put the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network over the 1 million downloads milestone.
Really?
Yes.
Nice.
Continue.
Awesome.
Thanks for your support, and let's keep it up. And on the newest ride down the highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and Jacob are with Matt Souza and Ben Locke to break down episode number 3 of Impact and the second anniversary show, pay-per-view number 100.
Mm. Also want to let everybody know, on the debut episode of NWA Croc and Roll, like Jim Crockett?
Yes.
Oh, I like that. Sean Kidd, Dr. G, and Callum McDougall are joined by Jacob Williams to look at the Saturday night NWA shows from April 1985.
Yep. And on the newest episode of The Evolution, Andy Atherton is joined by the Godfather, Nate Milton, to go over the long-storied career of the man they call Sting. The NWA Saturday special has Scott and Dr. G are joined by Drew Wardlaw to discuss the legacy of the United States Heavyweight Championship.
Check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed with some great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, The Great Debate, The Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. Subscribe today.
And while you're at it, subscribe to A Pair of Tremendous podcast feeds with Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position, as it's the home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and more.
Also, check out the new North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's the official home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Lawrence Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, and more.
Yes.
They're busy guys.
They're very busy. a podcast at least 5 times a week on that one.
Wow.
And we have officially kicked off the 2020 stretch project determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have until New Year's Eve to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board.
On our social media pages, the great song from a movie tournament has kicked off, so be sure to vote for your favorites today.
Yeah, so that's on the Facebook page, the contest page. Every day they have songs from movies. You can vote on which one is the best from a movie. Be sure to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by Jon Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. Also, don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web.
And if you're doing shopping over at Amazon, be sure to click on the banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to the Amazon page and helps out Place to Be Nation with no cost to you.
Yes. Huh. All right, and back to the Bash at the Beach. And so, actually, first, so 1992, they decided to have a pay-per-view in June and July. So the June
pay,
yeah, and a Clash of the Champions in between, which Clash of the Champions is like a big show on TBS that they would do where it was like 2 hours with actual big matches. So they had 3 huge shows within like 4.5 weeks of each other.
Wow.
Yeah. So Beach Blast, which is what it was called in 1992 and 93 before it becomes Bash at the Beach.
Okay, yeah. I think Bash at the Beach sounds a little bit better.
Yeah.
Beach Blast is, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that great.
Doesn't really have that impact.
No. So, the first match we'll discuss is at the Mobile Civic Center. And it's WCW Champion Sting, but this is not for the title.
Okay.
This match. So, it was versus Cactus Jack, and they kind of just made it that Cactus Jack just wanted to hurt Sting.
Okay.
And this was a month before he faces Vader for the title.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So that's why they kind of play up that Sting's hurt going into the Great American
Bash. The Vader match.
Yeah.
Well, he probably was not feeling great.
Right. So this match is billed as a Falls Count Anywhere on the Gulf Coast match.
I still don't understand what that
means. So I think that means that, like, so they're in Mobile. If they fought to Jackson, they're no longer on the Gulf Coast, and a pin wouldn't count there.
Well,
I don't know. I just like how
there's some interesting
I like how they
choices.
Did anywhere on the Gulf Coast instead of just a normal Falls Count Anywhere match.
Right.
It still is just that, but
right, like they're just kind of referring to it's like saying anywhere on Earth.
Right,
it's going to be in the arena. We know.
Well, it could be just outside the arena.
Right, but it's sometimes. Not going to be like they're going to get on a plane and
fight the whole plane.
Well, don't give any ideas.
So, and this is a match. Very little of it is in the ring. It starts on the big ramp. How do you like the ramp
in WCW pay-per-views.
Oh,
No?
Yeah, that does have the ramp right out to the ring, doesn't right. it? I don't like that look. It's a little dated. It doesn't really work. It's a little disconcerting.
Yes. I think Paulie Dangerous, or Paul Heyman, really liked it because it was for every ECW pay-per-view eventually.
Oh, really?
He would always hit that.
What did Paul Heyman get involved?
Well, he was a manager here. At this time in WCW, we didn't see him in anything.
Well, where is he?
He's there. It's just we didn't see him. There's 8 matches on the card. We watched one.
Fair enough. All right.
But then, shortly after this, actually, he gets involved with ECW and eventually owns that.
Okay.
So he must have really liked the ramp. So what were your thoughts on the match in general?
Hang on, just taking another note.
Sure.
Stinking jump. That's
yeah.
It. That was my yes, big takeaway from that. I know that I'm sure it's not really a hot take for wrestling fans, but
no, very athletic.
I'm starting to get, like, obviously we talked earlier that not a lot of Sting matches, but
right.
definitely understands like his popularity.
Yeah, so Sting, at 92 was a, so who would you think he compares to in WWF?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I was going to say Ric Flair just because of the bleach blonde hair, but now, I guess Ultimate Warrior?
Yes.
Hey.
And the thing is...
Oh, the face paint on the mat.
The face paint, and actually Sting and the Ultimate Warrior were tag team partners when they first started.
Oh, really?
Yes. They were called the Blade Runners. And Sting was Sting from the get-go. The Ultimate Warrior was actually Rock.
Oh.
Obviously not the most successful
Seriously.
Rock that there would be, but pretty...
Someone else did a good job with that name.
Yes. So, let me see if I could get a picture of them.
So, like, what years were they a tag team?
Like, 85.
Oh, okay.
So, here they are.
Yeah.
not too impressed?
No, I...
Yeah, they were both
that
just
that
juice to
weird.
The gills.
Yeah, that's why they're kind of not commenting on.
Yeah.
That's funny, because Sting didn't look... That jacked and
yeah, he kind of like I mean
92. I mean like juice, not like
yeah. He kind of like
the warrior.
Yeah, the warrior was always ridiculously juiced and yeah. Sting kind of like kind of made it look more not natural, but somewhat more natural.
Yeah,
more proportioned. Yeah, he doesn't have
like
the veiny muscles
right or
popping out.
Like I don't know what the muscles are called. Like Brock Lesnar's
deltoids.
And they're really obnoxious. Like the back muscles are like popping off his back.
Yes. So yes, Sting is definitely very athletic, and yeah, he was kind of him and Ultimate Warrior kind of progressed the same time.
Paralleled,
yeah. And someone who was not a bodybuilder before he became a wrestler, Cactus Jack.
Nope.
So what did you think about him in this match?
He did a good job.
Yeah.
I like Mick Foley.
Yeah.
He's always, I think, a solid performer and knows what he's doing, hits his marks.
Yeah.
He's gonna make it a good match.
And as usual for him, takes many more risks than his opponent.
Yeah.
Even I mean Sting sticks with him, but it's Cactus Jack to make others look good.
Right.
Which
right.
they do and
oh yeah, they're all over the place. They're in the crowd in this one.
Yeah.
There's
surprisingly, they don't go to the beach setup.
No, they didn't. Not to the Gulf Coast.
No,
they
didn't
go out
onto the coast itself.
Or the fake coast in the arena.
Yes. And then yeah, Sting finishes it with a clothesline off the top rope onto the ramp.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, the ramp.
Yes.
Of course. And this is at the concrete around the ring, I think.
Yeah, yeah there was no mat, so there was a few times that. Yeah, usually Cactus Jack falls off the apron onto that, which is not probably great.
No. Yeah, he's okay mentally right now, isn't he?
Kind of, yeah. He was, like, I think he's okay for now.
Okay.
Like, towards the end of his career, he started to worry about it. And, like, he said to Vince McMahon he wanted to retire in 6 months because he starting to have trouble like remembering his address and stuff. So Vince McMahon was like, no, you're retiring now.
Oh, yeah.
And then they were able to figure out like 2 months.
Well, that's kind of good. Vince, you know, acknowledged it at least. They'd be like, no.
So then.
Yeah, that was a good match.
Yeah, I like it. So then we went to 1994. Mm-hmm.
and it is one of the two most important matches, I would say, in WCW's, as WCW, like from 89 on.
Okay.
Definitely one of their two biggest matches.
Well, yes, this is the debut of Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
And his whole family was there.
Yes, his whole family.
Front row.
They're all there, front row, yes. They're very obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he comes out with Mr. T and Jimmy Hart.
Of course.
And Shaquille O'Neal comes out, but I guess he's just like holding the belt up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, got to get all the early 90s slogans.
Yes, and I mean, it's in the Orlando Arena, and at the time, Shaq was on the Magic, so.
I'm in.
It's the house that Shaq built, I suppose, the Orlando Arena. You know, it's been open for 4 years, so he helped build it. And then Ric Flair, of course, has Sensuous Sherry. She's not sensational, because that's WWF trademark. But
right.
She's Sensuous here, and she's very involved.
Yeah, a little too involved, I think.
Yeah, she hits flying splashes off the top a few times.
She tries to.
Yes. And I do like the one point when she tries to get involved and Jimmy Hart stops her. She just cold cocks Jimmy Hart, because that's really what would happen, I think.
Yeah. Jimmy Hart had his head to toe.
Hulk Hogan, with the huge Hulk Hogan face on the back.
Very good. Those are some outfits you want to keep. Yes. That one, maybe we have to put that on the Christmas list.
Well, he has a bar in, I think, Daytona Beach. I'm sure that's prominently displayed.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Hart's Tiki Bar and Beach Grill or something
gosh,
like that.
I'm sure it's crappy food.
I'm sure it's very, very classy.
Yeah, well, now's not the time to go to Florida.
Right.
Eventually, we'll put that on our list.
Yes. So it's 21 minutes.
Yeah, it was long.
I think it's really good. It's a very Ric Flair Hulk Hogan match, but it's what it had to be at the time. Like, you couldn't have had Ric Flair cheat his way to keep the title. You need to put the title on Hulk Hogan here, because he's coming in. You're paying him who knows how much.
A lot.
Not small
amounts of money.
Yeah, so it was the right move, and it definitely makes sense. And it got WCW, like, mainstream
attention.
Like, I remember on the 4th of July, like, my uncle's asking me about this match. And I...
Really?
Yeah, and I, like, knew, had heard of it, but I didn't think anything. I was like, I don't care about that. I care about Bret Hart. Like, I didn't care about WCW.
Bret Hart. Boo.
But then.
So I care about WCW after this.
Yeah, well, I'd always had it, like, in the back burner, but, like, during the summer it was hard to watch, because it was always 5:05 on TBS, mm-hmm. the Saturday night show. But in the summer it was preempted a lot because of Braves baseball. So I didn't see the other shows, so... It fell by the wayside in the summer, usually.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Really good match, though. Does exactly what it should have. It's not, you know, it's not a cruiserweight match or anything, but it does what those two should do and could do.
Yeah, right.
It was the best Ric Flair Hulk Hogan match you could have gotten.
Asked for.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's good. I mean, this is, I think, the little one was maybe... Some of these matches I don't have a lot of notes for.
Right.
So it's good. Kind of tan, but it was good. Hulk Hogan was very unnaturally tan.
Yes, as always.
Well, I don't know. I guess he was always kind of that weird shade.
Yeah, the orange. He was always called the Orange Goblin by people that don't like him.
Oh, I could see that. You're right. Even in the 80s, he was kind of orange. That wasn't like a later development.
No.
WCW. Yeah, all right. Yeah, he won. It was good. And then we had 1996 Bash the Beach.
Yes.
The Ocean Center in Daytona.
Yes,
is that by Jimmy Hart's bar?
It might be. I hope so. I hope
maybe they're attached.
Maybe, yeah. Right next to each other.
But this is Rey Mysterio versus Psicosis.
Yes.
And his headpiece was a little much. I thought that was going to come off, to be honest.
Yeah, it does kind of look.
It looks so unwieldy.
Like the next 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
And I guess if you wrestle with it long enough, it kind of compensate like the weight and everything.
We're used to it.
But this is, you know, two Lucha Libres. Who's the guy they brought in? The announcer?
Oh, Mike Tenay.
Mike Tenay.
The professor, Mike Tenay. Yeah.
Oh, what's the professor of?
Lucha Libre Wrestling.
He got his PhD in Lucha
Libre. I mean, you know, he probably got it in Tijuana, so it might be a little shady, but he is the professor of Lucha Libre Wrestling.
From an accredited university?
I can't comment on that.
Fair enough. Yeah. But he definitely was good commentary.
Yeah.
I think Rey Mysterio, you kind of know what you're going to get.
Yeah, but I think, I know what you're saying, but that's 25 years later.
True.
At this time, this was, like, mind-blowing.
Really?
Yes. I remember I saw this, like, 4 or 5 days later, because Chick would always get the pay-per-views, and then they would filter down to me eventually. So it was, and this opens the pay-per-view.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, all of a sudden, here's these two guys doing things that you would never, and it's, I think it compares really well to the Dean Malenko match, but it's like so much more high-flying than that
it
one.
Because
it's,
yeah.
Both of them are just hitting dives, and there's, it's not like hitting dives, working on a leg. It's
dive,
hitting dive. Yeah, I really liked it, and yeah, I think it stands the test of time. It's not, like, yeah, if you watch matches nowadays, it doesn't seem as impressive, but then when you think this was 25 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like this match a lot.
I could tell.
Yeah. And then, what, if I said Ric Flair vs. Hulk Hogan was one of the most important matches, this is the other one.
And I guess the first, my first guess, and I talked myself out of it.
Yes.
Oh.
You're trying to guess the third man.
The first thing I said is,
I didn't want to give it away. This is the reason we stopped the documentary where we did, because I didn't want you to see like the probably 3 minutes of the documentary that are dedicated to this match alone.
The first thing I said is like, oh, it's not going to be Hulk Hogan because he already made his debut.
Right.
And then you just didn't say anything. I just kept guessing. I think I guessed The Undertaker.
Yes.
A lot of
Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels. Did Shawn Michaels ever show up in WCW?
No. No, well, The Undertaker wrestled there a little bit in 1990, but for the most part,
okay.
When he was after
okay,
he was
well,
The Undertaker.
I know everyone listening knows who it is.
Yes,
I know who it is. I guessed it right away.
So it's the Outsiders, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, and their mystery third man.
I should have listened like more closely to the setup. Like,
yeah,
that's the thing. I didn't have the context. Like,
right,
I didn't realize that.
Yes. As Eric Bischoff likes to say, context is king, on his podcast.
Oh.
When he's going over things from 25 years ago, it's kind of like, you got to put yourself in the moment of time. Like, they'll ask him, like, oh, why did so-and-so win this match? He'd be like, well, context is king. We were building so-and-so and da-da-da.
Gotcha. He has a podcast?
Yeah.
Is it good?
It's all right. It's kind of, it's a little...
Self-serving,
and yeah, there's problems with it. But...
That's for another episode.
Yes.
A podcast review of wrestling podcasts. I'm sure you could do.
Podcast review of podcasts?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be... very exciting.
Hey.
So it's the Outsiders, and as they had talked about at the Great American Bash before they threw Bischoff off the stage, there's going to be a drawing to pick three WCW guys to fight against them, and it's Randy Savage, Sting, and Lex Luger.
Oh, shocker.
Yes. Just happens to be the three top guys.
What a random drawing. Brown-haired Sting.
Yes, brown-haired Sting.
Long brown-haired Sting. Not
Sergeant Pepper Sting, as it's commonly known.
Oh, really?
Because, well, he didn't wear it out this time, but he had
like
kind of like a Sergeant Pepper jacket-looking jacket.
Like marching band?
Yeah.
Like drum major jacket?
Let me see if I could find one for you. Sergeant Pepper Sting. No. I mean, here he still has kind of the...
Oh, yeah.
The blonde hair, but like
right.
This coat.
Coat the epaulets and
yeah.
Butter.
Yeah.
The fringy epaulets.
Yes,
that's
of course.
Very good.
Well, you got to hit fringe. So, right away, Lex Luger gets taken out.
Right,
like,
that's right.
Literally
yeah.
2 minutes into the match. So, it's just a standard tag match. Go ahead.
No, it's good, but it's very convenient. I know it's, you know, that's by design, but
right.
That same move could have like popped up, you know, like, 5 minutes later,
yeah.
Another match. But this
well, he's
is...
draped across the steel.
Oh,
so
right.
His whole head and neck is just traumatized.
Sure. Yep. You know what I'm saying, though.
So, yeah.
Like, it's convenient.
Of course, yeah. There's sometimes where a pile driver gets you a 2 count, and sometimes where it puts you out of action for weeks at a time. So
right.
It's all about how it fits into the match.
Exactly.
So Kevin Nash and Scott Hall and Randy Savage and Sting basically have like a 14-minute regular tag match. It's pretty good.
It's
I mean,
good. Yeah.
This is a match that's hard to rate, really, eventually, but we'll get to that. And then Savage comes in and is kind of cleaning house, and then Kevin Nash just gets a very vicious two-handed
yeah.
low blow that, like, lifts Savage off the mat.
Yeah.
And then Hulk Hogan comes out, and I don't know if you've heard it, but Bobby Heenan yells, "Whose side is he on?" And Dusty Rhodes is like, "Well, are you kidding me, man?"
That's right.
And then Hulk Hogan drops the leg drop on Randy Savage. And the crowd, it's not like they're confused or anything.
Yeah, they
right away start booing the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And just start throwing trash into the ring like it's going out of style.
Yeah, that was gross. It's like, stay classy, WCW.
Yes.
Well, no one ever thought you were classy in the first place. So.
Right. Stay you.
Stay you.
WCW going to WCW.
You be you.
Florida fans are going to
be
Florida. Exactly.
But I don't expect anything more out of Florida.
So the match is just like thrown out because the ref's taken out. They count the pin for Hulk Hogan, but it doesn't really count. But so then Mean Gene comes in the ring and they have the interview where Hulk Hogan declares that first tells all the fans to stick it.
Yep.
And tells them that all the... And then
they're all stupid.
They're all stupid, and that these two guys come from the organization up north. Because that's the whole thing with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. They had just left WWF.
Oh, okay.
And they came in, and it made it seem like the WWF was invading.
Gotcha.
And then...
Oh, the north. That's some other coded language.
The north means WWF. And then he says, "Who made more money up there than me?" So, of course, it was me the whole time. I opened the gates for these guys to come in.
That's so nice of you.
And then starts the NWO, and that basically launches WCW into success for the next...
Really?
At least 2 years, yeah. Okay. I mean, they... At the beginning of the NWO angle, it was like 9 months into Nitro, and they had been going back and forth like almost weekly with the ratings.
Yeah, with Raw.
Raw. And then once the NWO angle started, they won for a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
With straight. Actually, like almost 2 years. Because it was June to April, 98.
Wow.
And the NWO was the reason why.
But didn't everybody end up in the NWO?
Yeah, eventually. It
kind of loses its...
It lost its luster after a while. But the first couple months when it was just these three... And then eventually people start being added, but then eventually it gets watered down because everyone's joining.
Yeah. Kind of loses.
But at the time it was...
Cachet. Gotcha.
Big time.
Gotcha.
So, now that we looked at our four Bash at the Beach / Beach Blast matches, how would you rank these four?
Yeah, I think that the whole the last one's definitely like my least favorite.
I could see that. Yeah, that one's kind of like,
it's a little weird.
And it's kind of like, rating it though, I think it's kind of like the Hulk Andre match that we had in the WWF, because
seminal. But
the
match
itself is, I mean, I think it's a little better than that one.
Yeah.
Technically, but the moment itself kind of is the most important part of it. The historical significance of it bumps it up, I think.
Right. Yeah, the other three I all liked. I guess I don't really have, like, they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not like I have like a clear winner this time. I do like the Sting Cactus Jack, but I think I'm going to
pick
that one. That's my top.
I could see that.
And then, I see how the next two are, I don't know, just going off the name, Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair are the second one.
Yeah, and again, Hogan Flair is kind of, like, I think if you take the significance into effect again, like,
so
it's kind of like, is,
I guess the order we watched them is the order we have them ranked. Yeah.
So now looking at these 10,
oh gosh,
do you think you could, well, let's look at one-to-one. Ric Flair, Randy Savage, or Sting Cactus Jack?
Oh, Ric Flair, Randy Savage.
Okay. So that's your one of ones.
Okay.
Would,
it's like the eye doctor.
Would Sting Cactus Jack or Dean Malenko Rey Mysterio?
Dean Malenko, Rey Mysterio.
Okay, so that stays your two. Then your three was Vader versus Sting, Sting versus Cactus Jack.
Sting versus Cactus Jack.
I thought.
This is like, yes, yeah, not exactly the eye doctor because I'm not showing any pictures of wrestlers there. But.
So then next would be Vader versus Sting or Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair.
They kind of feel the same. Vader versus Sting.
Okay. And then your fourth was Kevin Green and Steve McMichael versus Ric Flair and Arn Anderson versus Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair.
That's a lot of Ric Flairs. Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair is better.
I would agree with that. And then next would be Kevin Green and Steve McMichael versus Ric Flair and Arn Anderson against Rey Mysterio and Psychosis.
Rey Mysterio and Psychosis.
So then, again, the Football Players versus the Horsemen against the NWO versus Sting, Luger.
I really don't like the Football Players.
Okay. Seven. No,
don't.
And then we'll just keep it. So this would be 10.
It's a minute.
8, 9. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So, that's a, so we're going to try and keep as close a rankings for you as we can.
Okay.
For your list.
Well, my list, yeah.
As we build it.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. We'll just kind of do it week by week.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. So then.
What's your list looking like so far?
Well, I have these all. None are lower than 8.
Oh, you're not. You're just rating.
Yeah, I didn't. I'm not ranking them yet.
So mine should say ranking because you're going to rank. Yours rating. Is a rating.
Okay.
You know the difference.
I know what you're saying.
I get what I'm saying.
You don't have to keep asking me that. All right. So, yeah. So next week, what we're going to do, or next month for August, we are going, because a lot of the times I'm trying to do it like by pay-per-view and stuff.
Okay.
But that's pretty much mostly just WCW.
Okay.
So we're going to look at Jim Crockett promotion matches.
Oh. Oh
so these geez. Are going to be okay. a little different.
Okay.
I'll give you a fair warning right now. There's going to be blood in most of them.
Okay.
I know it's not your favorite, but
no, it's not.
This, I think you'll enjoy some of them at least.
Are they all older matches then?
Yeah, they're all like 1988 or earlier.
Oh, well. Well, I trust you and your curating abilities. I liked all the little things you did for WWE matches. So
right.
Bring it on.
Yeah. All right. Well, that sounds good. And until next time, we'll see you. Keep making your WCW list.
Yeah, that's a redeeming spot of 2020.
Yeah.
That gives everyone something to look forward to.
Yes. Giving me plenty of time to watch 1990 WCW. Thanks, coronavirus.
Shelter in place and watch WCW.
Exactly.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. And if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past. Adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme. And put your car on cruise and lay back, because it's summertime. Sort of a buzz, but back then I didn't really know what it was. But now I see what habit is, the way that people respond to summer madness. The weather is hot and girls are dressing less and checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly we be out in the park, a place called the Plateau is where everybody go. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise, honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turned around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hip you and to get you equipped for the summertime. Yet hustle to the mall to get me a short set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair, cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more, cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends as y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kiss. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off nostalgia. All the kids playing out fun, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch. While the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around, you just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout, it looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop or fly from the beauty salon. Every moment frontin' and maxin', chillin' in the car, they spend all day waxin', leanin' to the side, but you can't speed through 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.